Hey, folks, welcome back to the Play to Win podcast. This is Alex, and I got Jared here with me.
Hey, what's up, folks?
And we're going to continue our trek through the Halo TV series on our bonus saga. Last time, we talked a little bit about Episode 3. This week, we're doing Episode 4 from Season 1, Homecoming. This originally aired on Paramount Plus on April 14th, 2022. The director is Roel Renee, I believe. I think that's how you say that. Writers are Justine Gilmer, Stephen Kane, and Kyle Killen. This one is the lowest rated episode we've done so far. We've got our own thoughts about it, but on the IMDb rating scale, it's a 6.6 out of 10, which is... it's still in that solid D plus middling realm there, so
it's kind of like a tale of two episodes, I think, is
it really is.
Yeah.
And we'll go more into it, but we were just talking off air. It could have been really neat had they made a few adjustments to this and maybe combined aspects of this episode with the next episode, but we don't want to get into that yet because we don't want to spoil anything for those who might be listening as you watch. But without further ado, Jared, why don't we talk a little bit about Homecoming?
All right. And I just refreshed my knowledge of this episode and took my notes, but I'm also using comicbook.com for additional reference in case anybody's wondering.
Good. And I've got IMDb up, obviously.
So, yeah, if we ever forget our sources, please let us know, because we want to definitely let people know what we're referring to if we didn't get it ourselves. So we start the episode with a flashback, and it's back to training when they were kids. And we see a young Riz, Vanek, our Lord and Savior Kai, Soren. And Soren's actually carrying the banner in this this flashback. And then, of course, we see John. And then from that vision, we are taken a little bit farther along to where John is in a room with Halsey. And I guess we find out that John runs away. And in this instance, Halsey's asked him why he ran away. And he says, I believe Jai. And I believe Jai is from the books and from that side of the lore. But he says that he told him that they were kidnapped, essentially, and that they were forced to be there. And Halsey pretty much flips everything on him and says, do you feel like you're forced, like you're here? And he's like, no. And then she just straight up lies to him and says that they asked him to be there and he agreed. And then she ends up going into the fact that she believes that he's special, and she's always believed that he's special, and that one day he's going to save everyone. So at that point, we're taken to the current timeline current time. And John is on the deck of the ship looking out into slipspace in the background. But in the foreground, Halsey and Adun, who is the creepy guy, are discussing John's significance. And she hints at why he's special, and there has to be some intelligent design behind the artifact. And she mentions that it may not be a weapon, it may be a way of communication, and if there's something out there that created this, she wants to meet it. And
the scientist.
That even kind of sends shivers down the weirdo's spine, which is interesting. But this scene wraps up, and then we'll take a pause and get your thoughts so far, Alex. But this wraps up with a really nice parallel to the scene where John and Quan were in the front seat of the Pelican, and she was admiring the slip space, and then John went into the science room, and she goes, you're ruining it. And John, after removing his pellet, is sitting there and seeing the crazy colors that Quan was mentioning, and he's admiring it. And Cortana starts monitoring his vitals, and he mentions that, you know, it looks different. And she's like, what? Slip space. And then she goes into the whole scientific stuff, and he goes, you're ruining it, just like Quan said to him. So it was a really nice callback to a cool moment I felt earlier in the show. But this scene ends on a really cool and slightly funny note from Cortana, where she, again, calls out his heart, his sweat, all that stuff, and mentions that he's anxious. And he goes, this is what anxious feels like. And he goes, technically, or she says technically. So I thought that was funny.
I'm glad you mentioned those aspects because that stuck out to me too. And I was just waiting for that. I love that little moment between him and Cortana where he's talking about the slip space and she does, you're right. It's the parallel. Like he's starting to grow. And this is why they, I suspect why they put Quan in here. Quan is the emotional side that John doesn't have. And as he develops, we see he becomes more Quan-like. And
but now it's Cortana has switched. I mean, they switched places. So Cortana is now John previously, and John is now Quan in that previous scene.
Yeah, yeah.
So and you have like the more on the rail AI right now.
Right. And I think this is a good way for the writers to help us track both John and Cortana's progression as the show progresses. These kind of moments, like clearly right now, like you said, the AI is on the rails and John is starting to become more human, going off the rails a little bit. But yeah, I love that. And of course, he's getting anxious because he's about to go home for the first time and that he can remember, right?
Right. And it's the first time he's really feeling anything. And that's such a huge emotion. First that you're experiencing.
I figured I'd jump in and just give a quick for those of those who are not familiar with who Jai is. Jai, this is coming from HaloFandom.com.
Thank you, Alex.
So Jai is Spartan 006. He's a Spartan 2 and the leader of Gray Team. So just the quick early that's this kind of the quick rundown on him. Obviously, he's a little bit different in the Silververse versus the Blueverse, so this information isn't quite as accurate. We don't know that much about him in the Silververse, I suppose, other than what was briefly mentioned. But he was an orphan and conscripted into the Spartan 2 program, I'm just quickly monitoring for spoilers here, too. He attempted multiple escapes with another Spartan. And I won't mention that because I don't know if that's accurate or not for the Silververse, and I don't want to spoil anything again. he suffered, the trainers, after suffering broken ankles, lost eyes, fingers, and toes, chose to shoot them with darts from the troop bays of the Pelicans after they tried unsuccessfully to capture them using stun devices on the ground. So that gives you a little bit of an idea of how tenacious Jai was as a child. Now, we don't know anything about him afterwards, but that's just kind of where we come from with the blue verse into the silver verse. I just thought I'd point that out.
And as I was watching the show and following along on the YouTube channels that I was watching, mostly Halo canon, he pointed out, yeah, too, that Jai was a fun character back in the main lore, so...
It'll be interesting to see if we get any more of him. We haven't seen any Spartans outside of Silver Team and Fennec.
Talk about this later, but I really hope the next season focuses on the Fall of Reach, and I hope it's away from Silver Team. Like, I hope that they are a very background thing and we get to kind of experience it through the eyes of another Spartan team that we may not necessarily...
Yeah.
Yeah, just like that game.
I think that would be really cool.
That would
I would like to see what's going through the Spartans, the blue team as that happens, the silver team as that happens too. Get a multi perspective.
See some ODSTs too. Sorry, that's some that's a side note. Anywho, so back on Reach, we are back in the Spartan barracks, and we find Kai at the sink where John previously stood. And she removed her pellet as well. But at this moment, Riz walks up to her and they have this very awkward moment where Kai is starting to feel emotion and probably starting to experience things where this super stiff Riz comes up and is kind of ruining the moment. And there's just this moment where Kai is expecting Riz to just move along and she doesn't. She's like, all right, we'll see you later. And then she leaves. So that was a fun and interesting moment. And you kind of get a sense of Kai's soon to be very prominent personality.
This is kind of a coming to age, so to speak, episode for Kai. it's fun to watch. It's odd, and it's understandable because she doesn't know how to be a person, and she's discovering that here all of a sudden. And it's also the other Spartans. You kind of learn how they are a little odd too.
Well,
it's fun to watch them interact, and we haven't got to that part yet, but. It's
definitely a fish out of water story for Kai.
Really? Yeah.
And there's, yeah, we'll get into that. We're gonna get there. So anyway, across the galaxy, we're back on Madrigal, and our fun story. Are on the way to Madrigal first off in Soren's ship, and we start to get a sense of the odd couple relationship that's shaping up between Quan and Soren, which it is enjoyable at times, but. We'll get into this a little bit more. But anyway, eventually they end up landing on the planet and they're incognito going into a market, and Quan notices a kid that she knows, and she calls him out, and he very fearfully speaks to her and says, "You shouldn't be here, blah, blah, blah." And then at the end of the conversation mentions that they're having a memorial for her dad at some point in the generals. Or at least a general will be there. At that point, the kid runs out of there as quickly as he can because she's very dangerous to be around on this planet because Venture does not want her around. And they find that there's a bounty on her head. Let's see.
So while you're digging through your notes there, just kind of want to point out how similar this planet is reminiscent of a pretty famous Star Wars planet.
Yep.
It gives me very strong Tatooine vibes, and I'm gonna
very
make a
most
couple.
Isley-y this
yes,
town.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll make a couple of quick comments here too. Of obviously, there's a group of Star Wars fans that can't understand why with the wide galaxy how we always end up on Tatooine, the desert planet. But I'm gonna point out here that it seems sci-fi creators have just kind of got this idea of a desert planet and can't get away from it. Every sci-fi has a desert planet, and it seems to be really central to what happens.
It's Dune? Because everybody ripped off Dune. Dune was
well,
the first.
Yeah, you're right. And I kind of wonder if they took this idea of, oh, water is so rare in the universe, only really we have liquid water, so that must mean if there's going to be life on planets, they're going to be desert planets. And that's a misconception too, right?
But I think the trope with a lot of these planets, though, too, and including Madrigal, and we get this more so later on in the series, but it's resource rich. There's a lot of stuff underneath it,
yeah.
Which means that it's significant in that sense. Tatooine and Star Wars, and I'm outing myself as a crazy Star Wars nerd that goes really hard at this lore stuff, but Tatooine used to be an ocean, and you look at the fauna on Tatooine and they're all kind of water-based. Like even in this past episode of Kenobi, this season of Kenobi, he's chopping up this giant creature and it looks like a big manta in the sand. And
even the meat looks kind of like fish.
Yeah, and in the lore, Tatooine used to be an ocean planet. Yeah. Even in Dune, I think Arrakis used to be in like a super resource rich planet. And at some point after, spoilers for Dune, if you have not read the books, folks, but Paul, they make it a paradise again, Arrakis. So yeah, it all signifies like the flow of life and death, I feel, in these planets. And then I figure with this Quan side quest that we have in the show, we're going to figure out what Madrigal's purpose of that is, because stuff gets really weird later on in the season. Mm. We'll go into that. But that's what I think they use the desert tropes, is to show the balance between life and death, water, and blah, blah, blah. That kind
of thing. Maybe you're giving them more credit than I'm giving them, so... But maybe it's that thought out. Maybe it is that planned. I think they just...
Or the short answer is George Lucas ripped off Dune, and then everybody else ripped off George Lucas. So.
Well, This is the last thing I'll say on this, and we continue.
John Carter of Mars, and that's probably part of it too. Is Mars has
Mars is a good reasoning too, because everybody think, you know, back in the day, everybody was looking to Mars as this is where there was life at one time, and it's a desert-looking planet, right? The red planet.
Right.
The last thing I was going to say is you listened to Kevin Smith's Fat Man Beyond, right?
Of course.
They went off on a tangent talking about Dune and how, as Mark is telling Kevin the story of Dune, he's thinking, wait a minute, that sounds an awful lot like Star Wars. So I just thought that was funny that, you know, that reference there. And I love Star Wars, don't get me wrong. It just, I never realized it was that influenced by another piece of work.
Oh, it's completely influenced by it. Like, George Lucas is like, oh, I'll take Dune, and then I'll put Nazis in it, and then I'll take this guy. Yeah, I'll put some hippies over here. It's, anyway, I love Dune, and I love Star Wars, so.
And now we get to love Halo.
And now we get to love Halo as one of these properties we get to watch. Anywho, back out of Riddenness too. John is kind of wandering in the woods outside of what his former house was, and then he realizes the perspective of where he is compared to his memory when he saw his mom yelling at him with the case and the shovel and everything. And so using that memory, he figures out where-ish that was, and then he grabs a shovel and just pretty much starts digging. He ends up finding the chest that he was burying. He originally thought, I believe, that they were burying the artifact, perhaps, but it's actually a chest with a bunch of drawings he made as a kid. And these were drawings of the second artifact that they're looking for on the planet, but there's also Halo drawings in there.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, John is kind of getting drawn closer to the house with his memories, and you get this moment where Halsey and Creeper kind of share a glance because he's getting closer to a point that we're going to get into later on in this episode.
This episode is an interesting one for John as we continue to go through here, because he is kind of out of it this whole time. He's to use a psychological word here, he is dissociating.
Yeah.
But he is, he's seeing, they kind of present him to us as almost like visual hallucinations, but really I think it's just representation of very powerful memories kind of just washing over him as he goes through the house.
Well, and they kind of explain it later, and I'll bring it up because I made note of it, but when he touches the artifact, he says it opened up like some kind of pathway or some neurological thing.
It activates a section of his brain, right?
Yeah, or it reactivates it. And so eventually what's happening to him, I feel it's like there was a kink in his emotional memories and the hose just got let open, and he's just getting a flood of everything, because even when he gets this moment later, it's overwhelming to him, kind of. So... we'll get there. Anywho, back on Madrigal, Soren and Quan. Let's see. Oh wait, I got ahead of myself. So,
I derailed you.
Oh no, you're fine. This is actually where she runs into that kid, and they freak out.
Oh yeah.
Oh wait, you did derail me. You did derail me. No, I was in the right spot, folks. Sorry. Anywho, we are back on Madrigal, but we're actually
professional podcast.
We're actually at the memorial for Quan.
Right.
And she kind of glances around the crowd, and she notices one of her father's previous generals, and she goes up to her, and she pretty much tells her, "You shouldn't be here. Why are you here? I mean, it's great to see you, but why are you here? You
should get out."
And Quan is pretty much asking her questions of what are the orders, what's the resistance doing, where the general just bluntly tells her there is no resistance anymore. Most of the generals were made an example of, and Quan is just like, well, why were you allowed to live if you were so loyal, and kind of starts questioning that. But really, the general brings the point across to where the people are just more scared of the Covenant at this point and less scared of the UNSC. And that's why Venture's being allowed to be the governor here and
tolerating
a relationship with the UNSC because they feel that the greater scare is the Covenant, which it is.
Yeah, let's be real.
At this point, Venture's goons show up and Quan ends up taking a prod, which is kind of important. It's like a heat prod thing. A zapper, and she and Soren escape.
So, of course they show up, because, first of all, it's
Angel makes a scene. I didn't mention that.
Well, yeah, of course they show up. First of all, it's a known rebel's funeral, so they're gonna be watching this, because, yeah, like, only the most risky people, most rebellious people are gonna show up to this in broad daylight, right? Right. The other thing is, fucking Quan is making this huge scene. She couldn't say, hey, let's go somewhere where we can talk about this. Or, hey, you know, this thing called whispering.
Yeah, that she starts might be a yelling. Good idea.
Screaming. Yeah. I just, oh my God, just the whole time I'm thinking to myself, Quan, what are you doing?
She's very impulsive.
Very.
And emotional. And I feel that they don't give this character enough, like, redeeming traits, unfortunately, because I try to like her, but then she does stuff like that. And it's just so infuriating because it's so unnecessary. It feels like, and that could be an indictment on the show. It feels like that's just kind of generating drama that doesn't need to be there.
Right. Well, and that's part of the show, too, is they caricature all the characters. Partially, I think, to really beat us across the face with how extreme these differences are. Like I've kind of mentioned earlier, Quan is the foil to John right now because he's not emotional at all. He's the opposite. He's basically a robot, right? Mm-hmm. And Quan is the farthest thing from it. She's not functioning with
logic. She just needs to have just a little bit of sense of self-preservation, though. That's all I ask.
Right. And it's interesting because I don't know, maybe this is just my interpretation, but my interpretation of her earlier on before this episode, before this stuff happened, is she didn't really want anything to do with all this stuff, and now suddenly she's like, put me in, coach, put me in. You know I haven't been paying attention at all, and we're like in the fourth quarter, but I think I could be the quarterback.
Like, wait a minute. And another funny thing about Quan, while we're kind of going all in on her, is her father's movement is anti-UNSC, yet her biggest sponsor is a Spartan.
Right?
Who's the poster child of the UNSC. I mean, no, her biggest sponsor is the poster child of the UNSC. It's Spartan 117.
He's the guy on the poster saying, we want you.
And, like Uncle Sam, and then right? Her other dude, her backup quarterback, is a former Spartan. Like, that's just really funny to me how she's so reliant on UNSC material.
Yeah.
While she's trying to start a rebellion against the UNSC. I don't know. Anyway.
And I do want to say that that's not really a critique of Yaren Ha's acting ability.
No. She
does a great job, but it's just, I don't know that I love the direction they went with the character.
No, there are truly instances in this season where I love that character and she's super redeeming and has excellent moments. It's just, I don't feel like
this wake.
No, not right now. Not at the wake. But especially early on, though, her moments with John were amazing.
Yeah.
This little side quest, as I call it, is just a little odd.
Yeah, yeah.
And a little jarring. It pulls you away from the positive momentum I feel the other stories building. So back on Reach, we are with the Spartans and with Dr. Keys, and they are testing the artifact. And we saw that Riz didn't work and Vanek doesn't work in this scene. And at this point, Kai's up to bat and Kaya gets a little snippy in this scene, where she steps up and Miranda advises her to remove her helmet, and she takes it off and she notices the red grease in her hair. And sorry, I forgot to mention that before they go into the testing, Kaya is cleaning her rifle, her anti-materiel rifle, the sniper rifle, and she puts the rifle grease in her hair as kind of like a sign of rebellion. And it's a stretch streak.
I may have missed this because I was looking up the stuff about Jai. Did we talk about her removing her chip?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we talked about her moment with Riz earlier.
I can only do one thing at a time. My notes got weird
and mixed up. I had like lines and stuff, and that's why I forgot to mention her cleaning her rifle and then putting the rifle in her hair. But she did that before this scene, folks. But when she removes her helmet, Miranda sees that, and Miranda is taken aback because she knows her mom, and she knows what her mom expects in her creations, and this is very strange to her.
This is a little too independent.
Right. So she kind of, in her reaction, Kaya is just like, what's wrong? Is something off? And she mentions the hair. And then to deflect from that, Kai goes back at her and says, pretty much scolds her and says, you pretty much think we're machines and that we're not good for anything and blah, blah, blah. And then at this point, she just reaches for the artifact and Miranda freaks out. And then nothing happens. And then she's just like, anything else, ma'am? And then she just walks out of the room.
That was such a great moment with Kai. Like, I love that she's defending the Spartans and really pointing out, hey, we're more than just robots that everybody seems to think we are. We have thoughts and feelings with.
But she's also trying to convince herself of this too.
Same time. Well, yeah. She's learning new things. I mean, she's becoming a person, right? She's becoming a real girl, real woman. And I just love that quirky side of her personality where that's developing, where she's just like, boom, I'm gonna reach and grab this thing, right? This was great.
Yeah, that it's like this is one of like so many wonderful Kai moments. There's one in a future episode it's hilarious. Anyway, going back to Ridness 2, they're back in John's childhood home, and at this point, John asks if Cortana knows how it looked before, because nobody's lived here for a very long time, so there's a lot of overgrowth and wear on the house. And so Cortana pretty much says that she can use John's memories to overlay an image in his heads-up display, so he puts his helmet back on, and she projects everything around the house. And so as he walks around, there aren't as many,
I know he notes that,
okay. So he's walking around. Yeah. He sees some things out of place, like the table. He's like, oh, that wasn't there. And so
it's over here.
Cortana moves it for him. But the biggest point with this is he's seeing the house, but nobody in it at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a moment where he says, oh, I used to do this here. And then, oh, mom used to hang my pictures here. And he kind of starts to remember her. And but really, it's just the focus on the picture. What's up?
Oh, go ahead. I think you're
about to. Oh, yeah. I was going to say he remembers his bedroom. And he's like, my bedroom's over here. But he can't see anything. And he can't. Mm-hmm. There's kind of like a memory block. And then he's like, oh, wait a second. And then his dog, that white dog, runs past him. And then little him runs past him. And then at this point, he's starting to remember not only himself, but his mom and his dad. So you get this moment with his dad showing him part of the, what is it, Reach for Life project and the botany. And he shows him how a plant grows and tells John that one day, you know, he could do this too and grow life on this planet. And then there's this other fun memory with he and his mom, and he'd been dirty, and she's like, you know, kind of giving him grief for it. And at the end of it, she just pretty much lets him know that, you know, sometimes you got to get dirty as a kid and have fun and stuff. And then there's this point where he turns around and notice his young him knelt down drawing. And so he walks up to his young self and kneels next to him. And he starts seeing his doodles or drawings or whatnot, and sees that he's drawing the halo. And this point kind of brings John back to the memory of him slipping past the wall of the Reach for Life program and going mm-hmm. to the less settled part of the planet into these mines. And he goes down into this cavern and walks through a cave, and that's where the object mm-hmm. is. And then that's where John first remembers it again. But at this point, when John sees the object, he kind of snaps out of it, because there's this moment in this scene where Halsey's just like, what are you showing him? And Cortana's is like, it's not me. And so John's just kind of having runaway memories. But when he snaps back, I think it's when it's actually the synthetic memories again that he's seeing in his HUD. And he hears a coin flip, which is important not only in this timeline just for that sound, but in the books, that coin was very, very mm-hmm. important with Halsey. But he walks back there and he sees young him speaking with a younger Halsey in his house when his parents are alive, when they were not supposed to be together at all.
Right.
And at this point, John's just like, wait a second.
John's no dummy.
And he starts to put one and two together and goes up to Halsey, removes his helmet, and just does not say anything, just removes himself from the situation. But he is obviously pissed.
I think it's interesting that, you know, this Halsey is making a calculated gambit here, right? Like, she believes they need to find this artifact. Like, it's very important. Granted, it's probably her scientific curiosity that's driving her more than anything. She doesn't know what this object is. She doesn't know what it does. And of course, as the memories start coming in, they flood. You know, you don't remember one aspect and just completely forget these other probably more important aspects of your life. I mean, when you think about mm-hmm. things, humans, normal functioning humans, relate to people, not to objects. So when they think about memories, it tends to be in relation to people, not just objects. So of course he's going to start seeing these objects and think, wait a minute,
right,
there are people here, right?
Right.
Nightmare is coming true.
I also forgot to mention earlier that before he actually started to experience the memories within his heads up display, Halsey gives him this spiel that, oh, you're gonna get a sense of emotion and weird memories flooding together, and you might see some glitches and things that weren't meant to be. And so that's what she used to try to justify being there. It's right. Just like, oh, it's just mental shenanigans, essentially.
She's trying to feed him some scientific nonsense.
Yeah.
Right, to make it sound like it's real, but we all know it's not.
Well, and they did design the Spartans to be highly intelligent individuals, right? Too. So John ain't no dummy. Back on Reach, we're back in Miranda's lab, and this is another really, really awesome moment where you have Vanek and Riz just kind of standing at attention, and you have Kai looking at the dead elite, and then she picks up a needler.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Randa's freaking out, like, don't touch that. She's like, oh, I've handled plenty of these. And she starts just gushing over the gun, saying it's her favorite. And she finally mentions, or she goes over to Riz and Vanek. She's like, what's the word that they call it? And then they say the word in Sangheili. And this is a great time when Miranda's just like, wait a second. They're around them the most. They know a lot of their language. What else do they know? But there's this really funny thing that Kai says after Miranda asks her a question, saying, you know, how do you know it means needler? She's like, oh, that's what they always say when we point it at them. She goes, well, I guess it could mean, oh, shit.
I love that. And I love how Vanek's back there just saying, correct. And then correct. He's like, also correct.
Also like, oh, correct.
Okay. That's a good moment. This room, I actually love this room because it's full of like little Easter egg stuff. Because there's there's the Sangheili, there's the elite there laying down, being examined.
They mentioned the grunt for the first time begging for its life.
And how pathetic it is,
yeah.
Which is hilarious. It's terrible, but it's also hilarious because in the video games, it's so funny when they're like, no! Yeah. You know, they're running away and screaming and talking in their funny voices and all this stuff, and it's just great. And so I love that reference. But there's the Needler. There's a Covenant Carbine in the case behind them, which is the first time we see one of those as well. Mm-hmm. And then you can see on one of the hollow pads in the background, an Elite plasma rifle is there as well.
Oh, yeah.
So there's just a lot of little Easter eggs in this, or at least fan service stuff that's really cool. And ultimately, that's one of the things that makes this show so awesome for me, personally, someone who loves the games and the lore and the books and all that, is the fan fiction and seeing this stuff come to life, and not just in moments where I'm having to do a first-person shooter mission, but actually...
I love seeing the scale of the Needler, because it's huge.
Yeah.
Compared to what I thought it was, because in
like
the game it was teeny. 7 feet
tall, right?
Yeah.
All the Spartans are like 6'10", 7 foot tall, and
it covers your torso, pretty much, it looked like.
Which, that weapon is used a lot by, you know, the small Covenant, like mm-hmm. the Grunts and the Jackals. So that just tells you how big those guys are, too.
Right.
They're only small compared to the Elites and the Spartans and the Brutes and the Hunters. Oh, and that's the other thing that's there. In one of the vats of liquid there,
mm-hmm.
there's the little like worm tentacle things from the Hunters.
Which, man, that still trips me out that there's a bunch of worms.
And it's funny that we talked about that on a couple episodes ago, and
we kind of saw one together, because we saw the foot of one, or we saw the worms together in a boot, and then we saw them not as a Hunter.
And we talked about that, and we were both like, wow, I don't remember that. And both of us have some experience with the lore outside. You know, I've read a couple of the books, and you've gone through Reach as well. And it talks about that in the book, and I just didn't put two and two together until that moment. And I actually was reading one of the books not shortly after that, and they talk about that specifically. And I was like, oh. I guess I should have known this.
Right.
So I thought that was cool, too.
But yeah, this show is really good about giving, as they're building the world and building the characters, I feel. And it's necessary, because these episodes are very slow burns right now, admittedly. I do feel like they could do a good job of giving you little Easter eggs and fun callbacks like that.
Yeah.
So we're back on Madrigal, and Soren and Quan see that Venture's men are stealing Soren's ship and stripping it for parts, pretty much, it looks like. And so, what's
Hunters,
up?
Hunters are known as Lek'Golo. That's the little worm things.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the full name is Imgalek'Golo, which literally means Serpent Union. Throw that out. It's from Halo fandom as well.
Cool. And I can just hear McKee saying, Igalek'Golo.
I know, right?
I love the way she speaks that language. Anyway, Quan mentions to Soren that they need to go see her aunt, because he's pretty much saying we need to leave. And she's like, well, my aunt has the money. And so that's what gets Soren to go with her.
You want to get paid?
They go through the town, like through the market, and they're attacked, but it ends up being Quan's aunt's men, and they lead her back to an alleyway or whatnot. And she's safe with her aunt for now. And Soren at this point is going to go off and try to find transport off planet. At this point, we are now transported, unfortunately, to it looks like an old Roman bath, and Venture is in said bath. And this assassin lady, I think her name is Franco, she walks in, and Venture hires her to kill Quan and to do it quietly, and states that it has to be done quietly. Otherwise, there's too many rebellious cells still on the planet, and Quan will be seen as a martyr, and we don't want that. And Mickey, or not Mickey, but Franco. Too many names like that.
Violetta Franco.
Franco, there you go. Violetta Franco. Silently agrees that she'll do it, but she also thankfully covers Venture with a towel.
This character really reminds me of Book of Boba Fett, the assassin that follows around Boba. I can't think of her name off the top of my head.
Oh, Vinnick? Vanek.
Yeah, is that or who
Finnick.
It is?
No, it's Finnick Sand.
Finnick Sand, the female character he saves?
Yeah,
That's who Violetta Franco reminds me of for some reason. Probably because they're both badass female assassins. That's probably why. But
she was giving me Gina Carano vibes from Mandalorian. I forget her.
I know.
Cara Dune. There you go.
She's a little more, they're kind of similar in style, I think, the way they carry themselves. So I could see that as well.
Right. Anywho, Quan goes in to see her aunt after that. So we will come back to that conversation in a sec because it's important. But back on Reach, Keyes and Kai start to connect just a little bit more. And they start to tell Miranda a little bit more about their upbringing. And she jokes that, oh, you guys probably didn't have much fun training. And Kai sarcastically speaks about how they had pets and how it was fun. And while she's being sarcastic,
that's so fun.
The other two Spartans at this point are still pretty much, they don't care. But I think Kai is actually getting
frustrated at this point.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a cadence between the Spartans.
Right.
Sure. Because
they're not as emotionally connected as Kai is at this moment, but they are starting to, they are getting drawn in as much as they can really get drawn in, right?
Right. And so Kai describes how they would have these pets, they would name them, they go through each one of their pets and their names. I think Vanek had a pig named Ivan the Terrible, and Kai had a puppy or something like that. And what would happen is they would go on these survival hunting or seek and destroy mission kind of things where you had hunters and hunted. And if you were on the losing team, you would have to kill your pet essentially. And Kai mentioned that she made it like 9 times through before she had to get rid of hers. And Riz says she only made it like 4, but Vanek was like, oh, I never failed in any of my missions. And Miranda says, well, at least you got to keep Ivan. She's like, nope. Dr. Keyes eliminated, or
Halsey.
Dr. Halsey eliminated it, and that's how he said it, eliminated it. And he pretty much said that they can't love anything or focus on anything other than other Spartans.
It's about the team, and I was thinking about this too when watching that. Is human development is so complicated that the way that they're forcing these Spartans in the Silververse to kind of form. Seems to me almost as likely to backfire and create sociopathic. I mean, I guess they're trying to create somewhat sociopathic individuals, but like psychopathic, I guess.
They pulled that from real militaries, though. Like the French Foreign Legion did that at one point.
Yeah, but that's not the only thing they did. That's just the thing that reminded me of that.
Oh.
I mean, first of all, they're kidnapping kids and. There's a lot of stuff, and there's a lot of stuff in the books too. They just go above and beyond in the Silververse to make it even more inhumane.
Well, in the Silververse, they don't try to whitewash it and make it. In the books, it's like this is messed up, but it's for the greater good. And in the Silververse, they're showing this was messed up.
It's just messed up.
So I'm curious if they'll. Go into the Spartan One program in the show. Anyway.
That didn't work out so well.
No. Not totally a failure, but anywho. Back on Aridness. Let's see. So back on Aridness at this point, John comes clean and tells Halsey exactly what he saw. And he tells her, well, he asks her why he saw that. And then she tries to give him that same explanation again about, oh, I warned you that you would see weird things and glitches, you know, with your emotions mixed up. And at this point, John just realizes that she cannot be trusted like he previously thought. And then he storms off yet again. So that was that scene. Back on Madrigal, Soren procures a bike from a dude after he figures out where to get off planet. So he knows where the spaceport is. And he goes back. And then from there, we jump to Quan's aunt's house. And Quan's aunt tells her that she's broke. They are broken, that her dad spent all the money on the rebellion. Then after the money cleared up, nobody wanted to be around anymore. Pretty much says that her father was a fraud and he fought for a lie, and he went out into the desert at one point, found a group of mystics, had a vision that revealed the Haas meaning for being on Madrigal, and that's what he fought for. And at this point, Quan asks where these mystics are because she needs to go see them. But unfortunately, Franco enters and kills Quan's aunt. Soren gets back at the right time and shoots at Franco. I think he nicks her at least, and she bails out the window. But he and Quan end up making it back to the square. They're getting shot at, get on the bike, and there's a little bike chase through the town when we cut away to Aridnus too. Any thoughts there?
I just wanted to mention, because we haven't talked about it yet, Soren's golden gun. What do you think of that?
I mean, it's a real gun. It's a Taurus. I think it's like a 357 mag. And the way it's designed, it's like Vash the Stampede's gun, the way that revolver's designed, where the actual barrel is lined up with the bottom chamber of this. I think it's a five shooter in this case. And the reason it does that is when you shoot, the force is not going on top of your hand. It's more going in line with your hand. So in theory, that should have less recoil with where that barrel's placed.
It's just cool. I just think of how that speaks to his character, that he's walking around with this.
Like a cowboy gun.
This BA golden gun.
Yeah.
He's a space cowboy. That's what he is. He's a space cowboy.
And he handles it like a cowboy, too. He flips it around, and he has the same mag holster as John does, but yeah, flips it and just, like, flings it to his thigh. That's a cool gun.
He would fit it. His character would fit in worlds like Trigun. Or even Cowboy Bebop. You know, that's the kind of character.
He would definitely be one of the dudes in one of the spaceports drinking in the bar.
Uh-huh.
And then they have to go ask for his help. And he reluctantly agrees.
I could see a really fun spinoff. It's just following him, and it's like that, right? It's offshoot things, and he's off in spaceports doing, you know, Soren things, right?
Whatever those Soren things are,
right?
He's a family man. I doubt he gets.
He's a family. But it could be before he got a family, right? Before the Covenant came, it could be after he left he ran away from the Spartan Project, and what his life was like. I'm sure he was doing some rough and tumble stuff for a little while.
Well, and we didn't talk about this earlier in the episode, but he was discussing with Quan at one point how it felt when his memories started to come back, and he mentioned that it was a year before he realized his dad was dead.
Yeah.
Left the Spartan program, and she's like, that must have been hard. He goes, well, it was another year before I realized it was me who had killed him. And at that point, I think he felt that he was doomed to be that person as he was getting those memories back. So there was kind of a sense of fatalness with him with that, and how he's kind of doomed to be a scumbag, it felt. I don't know. But forgot to mention that earlier. So he's a rough character all around, and now he's a well-trained rough character. Rich, well-trained rough character. Anyway, so back on Aridnus 2, Halsey and Creeper are looking at brain scans of Adune, are looking at brain scans of John.
Creeper's fun.
And this is when they mentioned that John's memories are opening up after he touched the artifact, how it had awakened old neural pathways that were previously blocked, something, blah, blah, blah. But at this point, John is listening to them, so they're not even trying to hide that they're not being sketchy anymore. But John walks up to him. He's like, I remember where the artifact is. And he jumps in the Warthog. And
which is a cool moment, right? We get to see the Warthog for the first time, and it's pretty BA.
And it sounds cool too, but they end up driving out to wherever that is. But this is kind of, we're getting a mashup because this is where the episode's wrapping up. At this moment, Kai and Keys are listening to a Sangheili recording, and this is when they really, really start to get a feel for each other a little bit more and really get more of a true bond and start to understand each other. And as they're going through this, they bring up the HUD from the cave when John touched the artifact, and this is when they make the connect of the word that they're listening to meaning Halo. And this is also at a point to where Kai mentions that she feels the way their upbringings were and how they were both kind of creations of Halsey in a sense, that they're sisters in a way. And Miranda is again taken aback by her some more and kind of goes into a spiel how Halsey doesn't like mistakes, especially in her creations. And she's kind of going through the spiel, and as she's talking about this, we see John make it to the second artifact and kind of jump down the hole where it is, and Halsey's following behind him. We then flash back to Madrigal, and we see Soren and Quan driving through the desert on the bike. Going back to Rydnish, John is kind of beelining it through the cave. Halsey follows, and John kind of approaches the artifact and halts, and Halsey comes up behind him, and he glances at her, and they share this moment. And then it's at this point where Miranda says to Kai pretty much that, you know, she doesn't know if her weird behavior is just a glitch, but anyway, Halsey doesn't like glitches, and it's going to be an issue pretty much. So a little bit of foreshadowing there. I overall like the actual Spartan storylines. I absolutely love this episode. I felt that the Madrigal storyline as a backdrop was very jarring, and it took away from the positive momentum that the rest of the storyline was building.
Yeah.
I also noticed, and this is my only other critique, and I didn't notice this before, but I did notice a little jankiness on some of the CGI on the ship when they were landing on Aridness. So
I I'm kind of looking at this as it's not, you know, it is what it is when we get with the CGI. It's a really highly sci-fi show and it's outer space.
It's still a gorgeous show, too. Don't get me wrong. Like, there's some scenes, like, Reach looks gorgeous when they show the big
Some stuff they spent more time on, too, clearly.
Right.
Some of the quick passing scenes they didn't spend as much time on. And the biggest thing isn't the art. Isn't bad. It's the blending of it into the world sometimes.
That's exactly what it is. Was the
blending. And so, like, what you're saying here, I noticed as well. When you see the ship coming into Aridness 2, it doesn't quite fit in the world. It looks like it's...
It pops out just super a little bit.
Yeah. And the same thing happens, I noticed, when they're in... When Quan and Soren are on the ship coming into Madrigal.
Mm-hmm.
The screen that they're looking at looks like they're watching a screen. It doesn't look like a window.
And
that's the thing. I mean, that happens in the fight scenes and stuff too, is clearly these characters that are not really there, these elites and grunts and whatnot, they're not there. They're not real. There's no such thing as them, hopefully.
There's
no covenant out there coming after us. So they're not real. They're all digital. That's fine. But they stick out and sometimes are better than others. Like, I think the scenes where we saw them on Madrigal at the beginning of episode one, look really good. I think some of the scenes later in the show don't look as good, and there tend to be more fantastical areas. And that's understandable. Hopefully they up the budget a little bit and they can.
This is also the third time I've watched this episode, and so I notice more things like that, because so don't look for that, folks. It's just one of the things that kind of moved me out of the episode.
Yeah. That's kind of where I was a little bit disappointed that they moved it. First of all, that they moved it into a TV show, because back when they were originally talking about this, TV shows didn't have the kind of budgets that they do now.
Right.
So Game of Thrones really changed that, right? Now, when they took it off of a big cable network like Starz and put it on a stream only like Paramount Plus, I'm like, okay, well, now that's going to hit the budget again a little bit. So that's kind of where my disappointment came, because I knew when they did that they're going to have to start looking at cutting some corners, and they did, and it's okay. They still did a really good job with it, but I think that's why there's some jankiness in the way the CGI fits into the world, and there's some moments where it doesn't feel like maybe the chemistry pays off in the acting. And I think that's because they had to make sacrifices. Well, we had to spend more money on this episode and the CGI, so we can only do like 3 takes of this scene, right? Mm-hmm. Good enough. Or we did 10 takes on the scene to get it just right because it was important. So the CGI, we don't have as much money to spend on that, right? So I kind of feel like there were some cuts, and I'm not a movie producer at all, a TV show producer at all, so maybe it's not as simple as what I'm putting it out to be. But we all know how money works, and there's only so much of it that goes around, and networks and TV shows like to make money, and they're not going to make money if they drop it all in 1 or 2 episodes.
Right.
So I get it. I'm all that to say, if you can kind of suspend belief just a little bit, it looks really great. And another thing I was noticing, I may have pointed this out before, but I really love the way they make the Spartans' movement sound.
Oh, yeah.
The heavy thud of the boots every time he walks.
Well, even the mechanical buzzing when their joints move.
Yeah, it's very subtle, but it's very good. And I think I've heard other people kind of say, oh, they really went overboard with the bass on that. No, I love it. I'm somebody who really loves a good, heavy, thick, full, low-end bass sound. And you make of that what you will. And I like a tight sound, too. Like, I don't like rattling, but this is nice, tight, for, you know, in the moment kind of sound.
It gives you a good sense of their scale, and that's why they did it. How they did it, and not just their scale, but their density. like they're thick.
I'm having so many things come to mind. I'm thinking the first thing that came to mind though was Back to the Future, when George McFly is trying to tell the mom that she's his destiny, and he says, "You're my density." That's like, oh god. So that we'll go with that one. That's the one that came to mind. Well, I agree with you. There are some flaws. This is my least favorite episode that had come up so far.
Which is unfortunate because it starts my favorite storyline, which is Kai's exploration into feeling and remembering and stuff. I feel Kai is she's one of the moral backbones of this series. She's not the moral. I would say Miranda kind of serves that purpose as well, but Kai and Miranda's mindsets kind of parallel each other as well, just like Chief and Cortana and Quan and Soren. It's a very interesting path that they take, and I enjoy it.
Well, and as good as Miranda can be, you know, we see some like drawback in her personality in this episode, right? Because she's not happy working with the Spartans here. She doesn't think of them as people. They're an extension of her mother, is what it is.
Right,
and
right.
She only gets interested in them.
Or they're the reason why her mom wasn't around when she was a kid. Yeah.
the only time she starts getting interested in them is A, when they start showing her, wait a minute, we're not all robotic, and B, oh, there's something you can do for me, right? And the sister analogy there is, I think, very fitting because
she's
like the older sister to the Spartans in some sense, right? I don't know if age-wise that actually works out, but developmentally, she's the older sister, and she's like these, my little sister wants to come in and play with my toys. Oh, gosh. She's so young. I don't want to deal with them. Whatever. Okay. Wait a minute. You have thoughts, feelings, and interests, too? We actually might be interested in the same things? Oh, my gosh. We could be best friends. It's like,
let's keep this a secret, though.
Don't tell Mom.
Right. Which was a fun. I like that moment where they were just like, let's just keep this a secret.
Yeah.
I agree.
But you know, those parts were really hit really well. I think they did too much with Quan. Yeah. A little bit to kind of break up what was going on, I think, is good. And a little bit to kind of move their story along. But give me less. Make it move a little bit. Make the hits a little less jarring, too. Because like we talked about with Quan being that dramatic, over-the-top opposite of the Spartans right now. Mm-hmm. Emotionally over the top. And I get, don't get me wrong, I understand she lost everything recently.
Right.
And she's just not functioning with any kind of higher brain functioning right now. She is not thinking things through. She's all about the emotional ride right now. Mm-hmm. And it just, it's very frustrating.
And there's no training for it. And she's having to deal with this by herself at this point.
Yeah.
And so, like, John has Cortana to help him through it. And not only that, Halsey knows, Creeper knows, and Cortana knows that he doesn't have his pellet, whereas nobody knows at this point that Kai doesn't. And so she's 100% alone in what she's experiencing and can't discuss it with anybody.
Yeah.
Which sucks.
I think it's a little weird that Riz didn't like put two and two together when she came.
Well, there was a hole in the small of her back, and her naked back was presented to Riz. And so I guess Riz just is super disciplined and did not look down.
It's like, I'm not looking down, not looking down. come on, Riz, you're going to take a peek, right? Come on. I just think it's weird because clearly Kai observed. And that's how she figured out John pulled out his chip and I'm going to try it out too. Right. So you'd think, well, Riz walks in at that moment. She's clearly not covered. If she had like a towel on or something, I'd be like, okay, Riz might not know, but she has
a knife. They pan out and there's nothing there.
Right. And there's blood on a bloody knife. She's cleaning off in there too. I mean, maybe that's just part of Kai's personality. We don't know. She's just always got bloody knives around and
just nicks herself randomly.
She likes to prick herself. I'm like,
I wonder what's in there.
That seems nothing. A little odd. There's some darker stuff going on with Kai. Maybe she's a little more disturbed than we know. I don't know.
Don't you say anything bad about Kai. She's awesome.
I like her. I like her a lot too. All right. I think we ought to wrap it up. We've been talking for about an hour here.
Yeah, but I agree with the rating.
That's longer than the episode now.
6 out of 10, but unfortunately, I feel that the highs in this episode were like 9 out of 10s, and the lows were like 4 or 3 out of 10s, and it just
it just balances out.
So
I agree.
We'll get a lot of that in the next few episodes, unfortunately. But.
All right, folks, we really appreciate everybody who's hung around for the last hour to hear us ramble on about, you know, some really nerdy television.
Things. So,
and really appreciate everyone who comes out and listens to our video game aspects and our discussions on those as well. We really, I mean, we do this because we enjoy it, and we're glad we want to be able to share that with everyone else who's interested. So, if you're out there and you like us, feel free to give us a follow. Give us a share if you got friends that you think would like it as well. Give us a review. Give us some stars. Give us a thumbs up. All that stuff really helps us.
Talk to us on Twitter and social media because we want to talk to people.
Yeah, send us some messages. We're active on at pod_win on Twitter. Or if you're old school and maybe you're a little more introverted and you just want to talk one-on-one, send us an email at play2winpod@gmail.com. And we're on your favorite pod catcher, again, at play2win, wherever you get your podcasts. So
we'll see you, folks. Thank you.
We'll see you next time.